weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, big thanks to Lottie and Dave for driving us through the afternoon. It is Friday, July 5th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, the Euro 2024 quarterfinals are underway. So Alan Colley is here to keep an eye on Spain-Germany, which has just kicked off in the second half. It is currently 0-0. Fergal Brennan will join the conversation as we keep an eye on that one and preview all of the other quarterfinals. And we will reflect on a dramatic night of League of Ireland action. Speaking of drama, there'll be plenty of that in Croke Park this weekend when the All-Ireland Hurling semi-finals are contested. Brian Carroll and Neil McManus will have their say on Kilkenny's clash with Clare and the All-Munster affair between Cork and Limerick. Jane Mangan chats racing ahead of the Coralie Eclipse at Sandown while Shane Stokes rounds up Stage 7 of the Tour de France. As always, if you want to have your say, you can send us a text on 51552 or WhatsApp the show on 0871879200.
Game On on 2FM.
Good evening. Welcome along to the show. Hoping you're having a great Friday. It's great to have your company here for an hour of sport on 2FM. Before we chat football with Alan and Fergal, some big news just before we came on air, and that concerns Leona Maguire and golf. Some great news as well, because Leona Maguire has made history by becoming the first Irish player to win a ladies' European Tour event after a one-shot victory at the Ramco Team Series event in Hemel Hempstead. The Cavan native had been the front runner throughout the tournament, but endured a difficult final round before coming out on top, thanks to a stunning second shot at the closing par 5 18th, having trailed clubhouse leader Maria Hernandez, who posted a 7-under par score by a shot going down the last. The pressure was on, but Maguire produced one of the shots of her career, having come out of light rough in the centre of the fairway before sinking her putt. It was the second Irish eagle on the 18th after Lauren Walsh had done likewise to round off a stunning round, her 65, seeing her finish just 2 shots off the lead. It is Leona Maguire's 5th win as a professional, but as I mentioned, the first Irish player to win a ladies' European Tour event. So brilliant news for Leona Maguire, and a massive congratulations, and indeed massive congratulations to Lauren Walsh, who just finished 2 shots off the lead, as I mentioned as well. In Wimbledon, defending Wimbledon champion Carlos Alcaraz came close to relinquishing his crown against inspired American Francis Tiafoe, but lived to fight another day with a 3-2 victory on centre court earlier today. So good news for Carlos in that regard. Alan Colley is with us. Fergal Brennan is also on the line. Alan, you've been keeping an eye on Spain-Germany, as has Fergal, to be fair. Nil all in the 48th minute, but it's been a decent match.
It has been a decent game, yeah. Cagey enough to a point, I would say, Shane. Not cagey enough to make it boring, but to make it interesting, I would say. Tactically, it's obviously a bit of cat and mouse with two brilliant teams, if you like, and two both brilliant sets of players, but we've just seen the best chance of the game so far. Alvaro Morata has just missed a great chance, a breakaway from Spain, eventually it found its way over to this right hand side where Yamin Lamal played a lovely little pass into Morata, and with his back to goal he just swiveled on it, took a nice touch, but just blazed it over the bar. And that's the problem I find with Morata. He needs 3, 4, 5 chances to score. I never find that he's really clinical enough, and that would be my worry about Spain potentially winning the tournament. But it's a decent game, Shane. Yeah, as I said, that was probably the best chance. Havertz had a good chance in the first half with a header that he probably should have done better with. But it is a decent game, and I would expect it to open up a little bit the longer it goes on.
Here's hoping, as I mentioned, second half has just kicked off in the 49th minute now. Fergal Brennan, it's been a decent game. It's been a bit of a tasty game as well. A few tackles flying in, as we just see, actually, the camera pans to Pedri, I think it is, on the bench, who was taken off injured after an early tackle by Toni Kroos, who perhaps should have been carded for that, but he wasn't. Fergal, it's been a bit of a non-aggressive match, but it's been combative.
It has, and it kind of builds on the pre-game comments that were made by Jens Lehmann, the former Arsenal goalkeeper, where he talked about Spain maybe being a bit inexperienced and small and overawed by the situation. The German players, in fairness to them, came back in their own press duties before the game to say, no, you know, he doesn't speak for us, we're approaching this professionally, etc., etc. But those opening 10 or 15 minutes, you saw almost a kind of five-a-side Sunday league situation of two fellas in their 30s of Gundogan and Toni Kroos dishing it out to Pedri and Lamine Yamal. Pedri's obviously gone off injured, as you mentioned. Yamal took a really sore one off Gundogan. And that was the kind of pattern of the early features of the game. And Luis de la Fuente's worked hard to make sure that Spain haven't been kind of bullied and arm wrestled out of it. He's brought Nacho on at half time, which partly was because Robin Lenormand has been yellow carded, but also if you need a man for a bit of a scrap, Nacho is your boy to bet on. He's been in that type of situation with Real Madrid so many times in his career. And whilst I don't think these young Spain players will be overawed or kind of roughed out of it, a little bit of experience through a Nacho and one or two others will help them, because it is a really, really tight game. Like yourselves, I'm watching it here now, and there's not been a great amount of chances. I'd agree with Alan, probably the two leading lights, Morata and Havertz, are not the most natural finishers, particularly at the very, very highest level. And that would probably indicate it's going to be maybe a one-goal finish or the dreaded extra time and penalties, possibly.
Gerard Piqué and Carlos Puyol, yeah, currently on screen.
Two heavy hitters in the stands.
There's a couple of lads who enjoyed a tackler too, Alan. Is it evenly poised, or you mentioned Spain had the best of the chances. Who's more likely to score?
I do think it's evenly poised. There's a goal. Just as you speak, bang on cue, Shane. Dani Olmo with a brilliant finish just on the edge of the box. And it came down the right-hand side, Lamine Yamal. And this is what's brilliant about, considering he's so young, he plays with such a maturity, and lesser players would have just, I suppose, cut inside, tried to whip a ball in with his left foot, or even with go down to the byline and try and cut one back. But he picks out a pass, and it was Dani Olmo comes in on the edge of the box with a brilliant finish, just passes it into the corner of the net. Keeper no chance.
So Neuer, composed.
And Olmo was the one, funny enough, that came on. Obviously, for Pedri, got injured earlier on. You mentioned that, Shane, which looked a nasty tackle. But we just see the build up here. Morata plays it down to Yamal, and again, he's always looking to come inside. But what the brilliant thing about him, he picks a pass, a great run from Olmo, nobody picking him up on the edge of the box, and a brilliant, brilliant finish.
That's such a calm finish, just passed it into the back of the net, into the corner. No chance for the goalkeeper, Fergal. This will open it up even a bit more now. Germany are going to have to come out of their shells a bit more, Fergal.
Yeah, and I think obviously Alan's mentioned there, Lamine Yamal, who's been so important for Spain, his third assist of the tournament. But I think Dani Olmo is such an asset to have, a player that can come off the bench, impact the game and score goals. He scored against Georgia. He's just put Spain ahead against Germany right now. I don't think another team in the tournament has a player like that they can bring on and score those really important goals. We've talked quite a few times about how the big teams have struggled to score goals. England, France, they've relied on own goals, late goals, penalties. Spain have been pretty free-flowing in that sense. And when you've got a player like Olmo, who is right on the borderline of being in the starting 11, but he still comes on with the right attitude and scores important goals, it just kind of builds the case for Spain. I said at the beginning of the tournament, Germany were my pick, and you know, I'm not going to go back on that. We've still got, 37-ish minutes left to go. There's still a fair bit to go in this. But for me, Spain have been the most impressive team in the tournament. That blend between experience, pace, bit of bravery from those young players, and then that experience right the way through the middle. Rodri anchoring the midfield, Lenormand and Laporte or Nacho in defence, Dani Carvajal as well, real kind of warriors in the positions that you want them in, and then that creativity and that speed in the other side of the pitch, which I just don't think other teams have that level of balance. Germany are probably the closest. France still quite disjointed. England obviously very disjointed. This is huge for Germany the next half an hour or so.
No, absolutely, and it has been all Germany since the goal.
It's been a good response,
fair,
yeah. Round the left full, getting down the left wing there, a little overlap with Musiala, but now Spain are on the break. You mentioned about it opening up, Shane. It absolutely will, because Germany do have to go for it. So we're in for a really exciting next 35 minutes. And I wouldn't discount Germany just yet, to be honest with you.
On Fergal's point there about the strength in pretty much all areas and the potency and the solidity and cohesion that they have in defence as well, would you expect Spain now? I know it's opened up, it's hard to predict. Is Germany going another attack and nearly unleashed a shot? But that's great defending, actually, to be fair. Spain could punish them here and go on and get a couple.
Absolutely, yeah. Because
if Germany aren't careful, I suppose, is my question.
But you're at the stage now, this is knockout football, which is brilliant, Shane, and that's the jeopardy. They have to go for it with a goal down, and you always run the risk, obviously, of the concession at the other end, especially when you have players with the lightning pace and Nico Williams on one side and Yamal, obviously, on the other. So they will have to guard against that, but they're in a situation now where they have to go for it. But it's been a really good response. As I said, it's been all Germany the last 2 or 3 minutes. They've increased the energy and the urgency, obviously, because they're behind, and they will create chances. I've no doubt they'll create chances. This isn't over yet, but here's the threat now. Yamal left in a 1v1 situation against Raum, and he's inside, so if it goes 2-0, I think it's game over. But I do think Germany have to go for it. Mm.
We will keep an eye on this and we will keep you up to date. Do not fear in that regard.
It's been a cracking 10 minutes. I'm trying to make eye contact with you. That's fine, Alan.
We will keep up to date and hopefully we'll get
I'm all about the eye contact.
That is fair, Alan. That is. Fergal, it's been a cracking game. Are you expecting more of the same this evening? Will we see a bit of a humdinger between Portugal and France?
It's a difficult one to gauge because in a normal situation you'd say yes because of the players that they've got, but France, similarly to England but probably for different reasons, just haven't really got going, particularly in terms of their attack. I think defensively they've been really impressive. William Saliba's built on that season that he's had at Arsenal and been a real rock for them at the back, but Mbappe, whether it's the mask or whether it's something else that seems to be kind of putting him off his game, just hasn't really hit the heights. He's scored a penalty. He's not scored in open play. He's not scored in open play in a European Championships as a France player in his career. For whatever reason, Didier Deschamps seems a bit unwilling to throw in Olivier Giroud, whereas in the past, he was kind of seen as the key player to allow the other players to play, Griezmann, Mbappe and Ousmane Dembele on the other side. So I think the selection from Deschamps tonight will be very interesting. They don't have Rabiot, he's suspended, so that's going to mean another change in midfield. Antoine Griezmann's come in for a bit of criticism as well. I think maybe a bit unfair. Mbappe's backed him as well. Griezmann's been excellent for France over the years and played in lots of different positions, but they need at some point for it to get together. But then on the flip side, Portugal themselves, in the groups, they were either very, very good or, as we saw against Georgia, very difficult to predict. And then the other night in the first knockout game against Slovenia, they were completely shut out. There was obviously the drama surrounding Cristiano Ronaldo and the penalty and what have you. Big teams, I don't think, let games drift to penalties. And that's what I saw from Portugal the other night. They did give it a bit of a go, but they didn't really push Slovenia in extra time. They were kind of happy to toss the coin in penalties and say, we've got the better players and we'll win it. That's a very, very dangerous strategy, particularly then when you come up against teams that are on a similar level to you. So I think it could go all the way. I really do. I just don't think either of them have been at the level that they want to be. But they've got enough experience to kind of stay tactile and push this as far as it can go. I think it could be a late night for Portugal and France.
Would you agree, Alan, there's probably not going to be much between these sides?
I think that's the case for the whole competition, really. I don't think there's any standout team. I think all the teams are of a similar standard. Fergal mentioned there that so far he probably felt Spain were the best team when we were chatting about the Germany match, and I would agree with that. They've slightly shaded being the best team, if you like, in that title, but overall I think there's much of a muchness between all the kind of big boys, if you like, and that's what we're seeing obviously in this game. I think we'll see it again tonight. It'll be a close encounter, counter tight affair, could be whoever is the best team on the day type thing. You'll see that, and I think even with Switzerland, England tomorrow, I think they're very difficult to call because throughout the whole tournament I don't think there's really any standout team, but I do think it'll be a cracker of a match. I'm looking forward to it. It all depends on the antics with Ronaldo in terms of, I was so disappointed watching it the other night, Shane, in the sense that he's obviously been one of the best players ever, we all know that. He's at the stage now where he's at the tail end, but he needs a strong manager. And Martinez is indulging the antics, and I blame Martinez more than anything. He's so weak, Martinez. And I've no problem if you want to start Ronaldo if he's contributing, as we've seen in the first couple of group games, and that's fine. But if it's not working out after maybe 60 minutes, 65 minutes, and the age that he's at and the quality that you have on the bench, get him off the pitch. But how they can leave him on, and particularly in the game the other night, and it came down to the penalty and he's crying and he's overshadowing like brilliant players around him as well. It's all about Ronaldo. Even when the goalkeeper saved the three penalties, the camera is panning to Ronaldo's reaction. Like, it's embarrassing at this stage, and I blame Martinez. He's so weak. I'd have similar criticisms of Southgate. I think he has major issues as well in terms of how weak he is as a manager and afraid to drop some of the big boys or leave them out or make big bold decisions. And I think that's what's going to cost Portugal when it comes to maybe tonight or a semi-final and a final. I don't think they'll win it unless he makes a big call and gets Ronaldo out of the team. Maybe not if he wants to start him, but after maybe 45 minutes, an hour, because obviously he's on the wane. We all know that. Everyone can see that. He can see it himself. But to be indulging the antics on top of the fact that he's not contributing like the others as well, I think it's going to catch them out.
Perhaps I was going to bore you with a useless stat, Alan, about
I love a good stat.
Ronaldo. I'll come back to you on it. Ronaldo having the same amount of goals as Zidane in major tournaments. Zidane's retired since 04 and it's since 06. So perhaps he's been a bit off it, Alan. Perhaps he's been a bit off it. Speaking of big players, Fergal Brennan, England midfielder Jude Bellingham has been cleared to play in the Euro 2024 quarterfinal against Switzerland after being given a suspended one-match ban for a gesture he made in the last 16 match against Slovakia. The Real Madrid star gestured towards the Slovakia bench after scoring an overhead kick to force extra time. Bellingham insisted in a social media post that the gesture was an inside joke towards some close friends, but UEFA opened up an investigation on Monday to determine whether the gesture violated the basic rules of decent conduct. UEFA since announced today that Bellingham had been fined €30,000 and issued with a suspended one-match ban. The ban will be triggered by a further offence within 1 year, UEFA said. So we talk about management wanting to make big decisions, make changes. I think I posed a question to you last week about will we see sweeping changes by England, and that wasn't the case. They crawled over the line. How different will the England be tomorrow that we see, do you feel?
I think this will be the most changes that Gareth Southgate has made so far in the tournament. But I think it's circumstance that's forced it upon him rather than it being a natural decision that he's made based on either player performance or his kind of view of how England have performed. The suspension for Mark Gay has completely torn up his plan, because we know that generally speaking he likes to play with a back four, even if that means shoehorning certain players into positions that they're not overly comfortable with. We've seen Kieran Trippier at left back have a few issues so far. Gay's suspension means that there's now an opportunity to play a back three. That's been widely reported over the last couple of days that it'll be Kyle Walker, John Stones and Ezri Konsa. Kieran Trippier himself is carrying a bit of a knock. Luke Shaw clearly isn't fit enough, certainly, to play 90 minutes. So these situations have been forced on him. But again, it doesn't really fit right. It's players being played in positions that they're not used to playing in, either for their clubs or for the national team. And it just seems to be a very un-Gareth Southgate move. I think he rightly comes in for some criticism for some of the things that he does. But one of the hallmarks of when England have done well in tournaments is that he's backed himself. Even if his decisions haven't been the most exciting, there's been logic behind them and they've got England to where they wanted to be. The reason that England haven't won tournaments is because their level has probably fallen just a bit short. But we could see a situation tomorrow where Bukayo Saka's played on the opposite side of the pitch. Again, out of position, not a role that he's used to. And it just feels a bit awkward. And again, we've mentioned this quite a few times, a lack of preparation. Everything seems to be being done on the hop when there's an injury or a suspension. These things need to have been planned for. There needs to be a plan A, B, C, D, and so on and so forth. If this player gets injured, if this player isn't playing well, if we need to play against a certain system, and Southgate just doesn't seem to have that in place. Working on a back three with 2 or 3 days' notice just isn't really enough. And you've got a Switzerland team who have been very, very good and are the absolute opposite. They know exactly what they have to do individually, collectively, and they'll be a real test for England tomorrow.
So with that in mind, Alan, simply, will the Swiss do England tomorrow?
I think they have a great chance. I really do, Shane. I wouldn't be judging them wholly off the back of the Italy game, because Italy were an absolute disgrace and really, really poor. But just on Switzerland in general, and as Fergal alluded to there, the team that they are, and I suppose the cohesive unit that they are, I give them every chance, because everybody knows their role, everybody knows their position. They play a 3-4-3 system, which is actually very, very good, very difficult to break down, but also in possession they're very, very good. Xhaka, who's obviously coming off a brilliant season with Leverkusen, Freuler in midfield as well, who's been one of the stars of the tournament, obviously hasn't had a great time of it since he went to Forest, went out on loan, but certainly at the tournament and huge experience at Switzerland, he's been very good, breaking lines and making runs, those kind of old fashioned third man run, if you like, into midfield, into the forward area, and scored as well in a couple of the group games. So I think they have a great chance. And again, it all comes back to, I suppose, Fergal mentioned about the issues and the problems that we've all seen with England, the formation, the setup, the personnel. We could be here all night talking about the problems, and it's just, has there been enough time to eradicate all those problems? I don't think so. They're doing things, as Fergal mentioned, on the hop. Will they improve? Will they all of a sudden get a tune out of the big boys? We just don't know. And I don't think he's going to make any of the changes that I feel he needs to make to maybe give that injection of fire into them, if you like, that maybe an Anthony Gordon would give them, or a Cole Palmer. I think we'll see much of the same as what we've seen so far in the group games. And it's just a question of, do they have enough to beat Switzerland? I don't think they do. I think Switzerland will beat them, Shane, because you can't keep getting away with what they're getting away with.
Yeah. That's at 5 o'clock tomorrow. 8 o'clock tomorrow, Netherlands, Turkey. Now, I mentioned Bellingham is available for Turkey, though. Demiral, whose brace helped Turkey overcome Austria and book their place in the quarterfinals, has been suspended for 2 matches over a wolf salute he made towards the crowd at the match in Leipzig on Tuesday. The salute is recognised as being linked to the far-right movement in Turkey. UEFA has said that the suspension is for failing to comply with the general principles of conduct, for violating the basic rules of decent conduct, for using sports events for manifestations of a non-sporting nature, and for bringing the sport of football into disrepute, which is a couldn't be more of a UEFA statement if it wanted to be. Fergal, Turkey looked dead in their feet last time out. Will they have recovered in time to put it up to the Dutch?
It's a very difficult one to gauge, and Demiral, who you mentioned, is going to be missing, and he was so important, not just the goals that he scored, the defensive performance that he put in. Turkey effectively decided in the last 25 minutes or so that they were just going to sit on the edge of their own box, and he headed cross after cross after cross away. The keeper made an unbelievable save in injury time to get them over the line, and that's obviously expended a huge amount of effort and energy from the players. You have got a couple of players coming back. Kalinoglu, the AC Milan midfielder, who's their captain, he was suspended, but they're also missing a couple of players. I do kind of think, and it's been mentioned a few times, that they're quite an emotional team, and that sounds a little bit disrespectful, and I don't mean it in that sense. It's more just based on this idea that at this level of tournament football, when it is straight knockout, you do need to have a kind of a grip on these things. You can't be having 2, 3, 4 players getting booked, the possibility of suspension swirling around. That will get you so far, and it might even get you through the first knockout stage, but when you get into the real crunch point where every tackle, every pass, every attempt on target is a potential decider, it just kind of makes me think that they'll come up short. The Netherlands have not been great going through the group stages. I compared them to Belgium, where they kind of looked a little bit short on energy. Some of the players are maybe the wrong side of 30, but the draw has been favourable to them in the knockouts. They were very impressive against Romania, who were limited, but the Netherlands could have scored double figures. They were really, really impressive. They kept banging and banging at the door and just eventually had to set up a 3-0, which sounds a bit odd. But they do have bits of quality. Memphis Depay, Malen, Xavi Simons, obviously Cody Gakpo has been fantastic for them. I think he's top goal scorer in the tournament as well. You would imagine the Netherlands will get through. I am kind of tipping with Alan for Switzerland against England, and it is a bold call because of how England were built up at the start of the tournament, but I just don't think they've learned the lesson from any game, from the group stages or even from the Slovakia game, where they were seconds away from almost an Iceland repeat from Euro 2016. So my hunch would be Switzerland and the Netherlands to go through on Saturday night.
Okay, we're going to leave our Euros quarterfinals preview there for now. Fergal Brennan, thank you so much for joining us. Alan, you're sticking around to keep an eye on Spain-Germany as well. We were previewing the matches for tomorrow. Portugal-France, of course, is on at 8 o'clock tonight. And that stat in full for you, Alan. Just
give it
I know you love it. I know you love this absolutely useless stats. Cristiano Ronaldo has scored only 3 goals in 20 knockout matches across the World Cup and Euros since Euro 2004. That is the same number as Zinedine Zidane, who retired in 2006. There you go. That's just marketing for Otto, if anything else.
Will we ever see the like of that man again? There was one doing the rounds after his antics with the free kicks as well.
Oh yeah.
About, I think it's at major tournaments, 1 goal scored in something like 61 attempts at free kicks.
Eric Dyer, I think, has scored as many free kicks.
But yet any sign of a free kick, there's only one man taking.
Poor Anthony Barry, that's what I said last time. The free kick specialist is Germany nearly equalise. That's a wonderful save down low to his left, Alan.
Yeah, brilliant save just on the edge of the box. It was Andrić coming in, Not sure about his haircut, but but it was a good strike chain. Yeah, they are pushing Germany. He's made changes as well, the manager. He's brought on Big Fulkrug, and I think he's going to cause problems as well. So they are pushing Germany. I don't think this game is over at all yet, Shane, but that's a brilliant save from a shot on the edge of the box from Andrich.
We do have to take a break very shortly, and we're chatting racing after the break, and we're previewing the All-Ireland Hurling semi-finals. You're keeping an eye on the football, but Alan, there was a big night of League of Ireland football. Shells drew with Drogheda 1-1, Shelburne finishing with 9 men. Sligo defeated Derry 2-1, which is a massive result in terms of the title race. Rovers steadied the ship somewhat, a 1-0 win over Dundalk. Waterford defeated Pats actually by 1-0, so Waterford's great season continues. And Galway and Bowes finished 1-1 in Eamon DC Park. You were up in Drogheda. Yep. For that match, a couple of red cards, couple of goals, plenty of incident, Alan.
Really enjoyed it, Shane. Yeah, it was a great night up in Drogheda last night, and probably for the first time all season it was the poorest Shells have been. Even, and that's not just about the red cards, even from the start I felt they were a little bit flat, didn't start the game great. Then they obviously got themselves in front from a set piece, Tyreek Wilson scores, and you're thinking now they'll just kind of manage the game, take over, and they did control the game right up until half time, you would say. Second half then I was expecting a little bit more of the same, and even them to push on and try and go for a second or third, but they were just so sloppy, and the longer the game went on, Shane, the sloppier they were getting. And it was almost a case of the sloppier they were getting, the more Drogheda were beginning to believe we can get something out of this. And Kevin made a little change to the formation, brought on a couple of substitutes. Ryan Brennan had a big impact when he came on, and then all of a sudden Shelburne, something that we haven't associated with them all season because they've been so good defensively, but the wheels came off massively. And obviously the two sendings off, as you mentioned, Paddy Bard, who's been outstanding, probably their player of the year, Bard Jarvis. Defensively, I think Paddy Bard's been outstanding, gets two quick yellow cards, he gets sent off. Then I thought the yellow card was probably harsh for Tariq with the handball. But he gets a second yellow and he gets sent off, and then they were lucky not to lose it. And the mad thing about it, and it kind of sums up the league all season, Shane, is that I was sitting there, and you're obviously following the scores from the other games, and you're thinking this could be a really bad night for Shelburne and Derry winning down in Sligo, and they're going to close the gap. And by the time I checked the phone again, Derry had lost. Shelburne ended up with a point but still gained ground in the title race. So overall, when you look back, it probably wasn't as bad as what we would have felt as the game was going on. But I don't think Damien Duff, now I know he came out and backed his players as he always does afterwards, but I'd say inwardly he would have been a bit disappointed with the performance. I don't think it was to their usual standard. But another big plus point for them on the night is the additions to the squad, and all of a sudden they look like they have a squad now, and they're going into Europe next week. They'll be obviously in the cup and they'll be going for the league, so they needed that injection of quality into the squad as well, and just the depth, because I felt they were a little bit weak in that area. So yeah, that was big for them, and they're still sitting pretty at the top, Shane.
Yeah, 3 points clear with a game in hand. That game in hand is away to Bowes. Shells in Europe, but Derry also in Europe as well. So it's the last league game for a month, considering how Europe goes, and then a cup match as well. Shells host
Derry. I don't think that's a bad thing for them either. They can park the league stuff now and they can concentrate on their couple of European games. It's great. It'll be obviously great nights in Talca, European football back, the cup, and then they can get themselves back fully focused on the league again in is a 3 or 4 weeks when they play Derry, the big game.
The August Bank holiday weekend, officially scheduled for the Friday. If either team get through, you would imagine that will probably get pushed to
and
a
even
Sunday.
Those new players that he's brought in, that'll be 3 or 4 weeks of them fitness wise. They'll be up to speed by the time
sharpness as well, not only fitness, which I think would be huge. We see Harry Wood, who was really good for the club before, was a bit off. It looked like a man who hasn't kicked the ball in a year.
Coote the same,
similar with Coote. Sam Bone looked well when he came on, but it was a bit of a back to the wall job as well.
No, they're in a really, even though, as I said, they didn't play as well, I'm judging them off obviously the standards they've set, as I've no doubt Damien Duff will be as well, but they didn't play anywhere near as well as that. But but I think going forward with the injection into the squad, I think they're in a really, really strong position.
As I mentioned, Derry will be disappointed, but they will be able to park that, focus on Europe and a cup match against Pats, which should be a cracker of a match actually.
They're too hit and miss, Derry. They let you down, that's how many times
the lack of consistency, but home and away, it's not even a case of the Brandywell being a fortress.
And even in terms of the points tally for the league, like I asked the question last night, and Stato LOI, who's absolutely brilliant on Twitter, came back straight away, because I'm thinking you're looking at the points tallies and in a 36 game season are we looking at the lowest, but he came back and told me that the lowest is Shamrock Rovers back in 2010, which was 67 points for a 36 game season. Shelburne are on 47 at the moment, so I still think they'll overtake that, but I still don't think we'll be in the 80s of
Okay, it'd be tight. It'd be tight.
Yeah.
It'd be a dogged end to the season as well. Before we do take a break, Alan, you are sticking around. Stato LOI, Tyreek Wilson and J.R. Wilson, brothers, one for Shells, one for Sligo, was sent off. The last time brothers were sent off in the League of Ireland Premier Division?
I read this last night as well.
Oh, it's gone from you. He's gone.
Because I was following. Stato LOI is one of my favourites. I was following this.
It was the Baker brothers.
Oh, the Baker brothers.
Richie and Desi.
Yeah, we played with both of them as well. Good players.
Characters.
Good
characters.
Players.
Okay, Sinead for League of Ireland. 75 minutes on the clock. Spain still lead Germany 1-0. We're taking a short break there. We're chatting racing and indeed previewing two massive hurling semi-finals in Croke Park this weekend.
RTE
2FM.
Game on.
Racing.
Now we have domestic race meets at Sligo, Naas, Limerick and Belfast. But Jane Mangan joins us live from Cork Racecourse this evening. So Jane, before we chat about the Curl Eclipse tomorrow, what is happening at Cork at the moment?
Well, we're looking at the horses in the parade ring for race 5. We have an 8 race card here down in Mallow. And a good crowd here to see them, actually. Our last race will be off at 8.30. We've seen a family winner for the Halfords when Shleve Barna took our 5.40 for Josh and Michael Halford. We've just seen a good performance there from the top weight Contrapposto for Dick Donoghue and Richie Deegan. A little bit earlier on, Sam Ewing and Gordon Elliott teamed up with Disco Dancer in our second race. And the opening race of the night went to... where am I looking at?
We can come back to that. We can come back to that if you wish, Shane.
Well, it went to If Any Man Can. Went down to Wexford. That's where it went. The Wexfords are beating the Corkonians time and time again. But hopefully this Sunday we'll get some of our own back on our Limerick crowd. But that's not the main item on the agenda this weekend, Shane.
No, it is not. We will be getting to that hurling match in due course. The main item on the agenda this weekend is the Curl Eclipse tomorrow at Sandown. Listen, with a lot of focus on City of Troy, and I saw Aidan O'Brien has admitted with a superstar cult, a lot of pressure is heaped on everyone involved. How do you feel City of Troy will handle that pressure tomorrow?
Well, I think Aidan O'Brien has mounted the pressure on himself because he's been waxing lyrical about this horse since before he ever ran. And he has, you know, basically stated he's one of the best horses he's ever trained. And it's 24 years since one of the best horses he actually ever trained was Giant's Causeway winning this race under George Duffield. 2 years later, a horse called Hawk Wing, who remains probably the highest rated horse ever to come out of Ballydoyle, under Aidan O'Brien's tenure, won it in 2002. In the last 24 years, Aidan has won this race 7 times, more recently with St. Mark's Basilica and Paddington. And if I'm being perfectly honest, Shane, City of Troy looks like he could live up to the reputation. He was a very good winner of the Dewhurst, and people will point to his disappointment in the Guineas, but we know the Epsom Derby is working out really well now with Los Angeles and Ambiente Friendly coming out and franking that form in the Irish Derby last weekend. He won't have to be the same horse we saw at Epsom to win over 10 furlongs this Saturday. Dancing Gemini, Ghost Rider, JRB, while they're all good horses, I don't believe any of them to be up to Group 1 class. So this should be a very straightforward assignment for City of Troy, particularly as he has his stablemate Hans Anderson in there to make sure that there's no mistakes made.
Okay, all eyes on the Curl Eclipse tomorrow at Sandown, and indeed perhaps a lot of eyes on City of Troy, the well-fancied City of Troy. Listen, I don't want to keep it too long. I know you've got a couple of more races to watch at Cork, but listen, I'm not one for looking too far ahead. But while I have you, Jane, we're not too far away from Galway, from Goodwood already. Is the excitement building for yourself?
Absolutely. We've already made our reservations for Galway. I'd imagine it's a place in demand for hotels and restaurants and bars and everything. Everybody's getting ready. If you were Hugh Cahill, you'd be already looking forward to Cheltenham next March. So I was wondering what you're going to come out with there.
I'm Galway. A day by day, meet by me.
Absolutely. Look, the National Hunt people will be looking forward to Galway. The flat people will be looking towards the likes of the Nassau Stakes, the Sussex Stakes at Goodwood. But definitely, like we saw the Grimes Hurdle last night at Tipperary. We saw Winter Fog win that impressively. Could he turn up at the Galway Hurdle? Very much so. I hope this rain that we're enduring in the early part of July dissipates for the festivals a little bit later on, because the Galway Festival is always a very special place, and very often at the likes of this meeting here in Cork or Tipperary during the week, you see clues, you see horses that are maybe getting their final preparations for the Galway Festival. So it might seem like this is a very much run-of-the-mill meeting here in Cork, but you could get clues here for the bigger meetings a little bit later on.
Okay, that is very interesting. We'll leave the conversation there for now. Jane, thank you so much for taking the call. Enjoy the beautiful surrounds of Mallow this evening. We are chatting hurling with Neil McManus and Brian Carroll. Before we do, though, just check in with Alan Cawley. 82 minutes on the clock, still 1-0. What has happened since we last talked
to you? Fulkrug has had an unbelievable chance, Shane. Wirtz went down the right-hand side, pulled it across the box, and Fulkrug, just when it looks like he was going to bang it into the net, Nacho was pulling out of him, but he hit the post. Really unlucky. Now I think Germany will get another. Here's Havertz in now at the moment. Here's Havertz. Here it is, Shane.
Oh, he's
here
to dink him.
Oh, shit.
Just over the bar.
What a chance. He's running through, and obviously the keeper's coming out to close him down. He tries to chip it over him, but clips it over the bar. It was a really poor kick out, actually. And then he's running in and goal, Havertz. The keeper tries to run out and he hesitates and he clips it over, Shane. And it just goes over the bar, but that. They're creating chances. That's the good thing. There's still 10 minutes to go. They're throwing the kitchen sink at them now. They've brought on Thomas Muller as well. But this game isn't over yet, Shane.
Well, you are going to keep an eye on that. Brian Carroll is on the line. Hopefully we're going to get as much drama as that we're seeing right now in front of us tomorrow and indeed on Sunday. Brian, how much are you looking forward to these? These are going to be two cracking matches, Brian.
Oh, that's exactly what we're hoping for. Look, I suppose this is the weekend that all hurling people just crying out for. I suppose since the Munster final, Leinster final, the preliminary All-Ireland quarter-final and quarter-finals probably weren't the best games, but I suppose we have narrowed it down now to four and we're in for two cracking games, in fairness, like Kilkenny and Clare and both Cork and Limerick. It really does whet the appetite.
No, it absolutely does. Let us begin with our deep dive. Let's go chronological order. Clare-Kilkenny tomorrow at 3 p.m. Neil McManus also on the line. Neil, if I come to you for this one. In terms of matchups, in terms of big decisions that could go the way of either side, what's going to be key to ultimately deciding this clash for you, Neil?
Probably how quiet the Kilkenny defence can keep Shane O'Donnell. I think Hugh Lawler will be detailed on Shane O'Donnell. Definitely if he's in full forward, and even potentially if he goes out to the half forward line, Hugh Lawler is... he's the best fullback in the game, in my opinion. And Shane is the most informed player in the country, with really only Garrod Hegarty giving him any sort of competition for that accolade at the minute. I think that Maggie Butler will travel with TK, Tony Kelly, wherever he goes, and I think he'll do a good job again. But it's all about Shane O'Donnell at the minute, and if he can really light it up tomorrow, I think that'll be the difference on whether we see a repeat of what we've seen the last 2 years, which is Kilkenny defeating Clare, or Clare getting over the big challenge that they've seen from Kilkenny and finding themselves in the final.
Well, Brian, following up on that point, do you think Clare will be too potent and they will overpower Kilkenny in that regard?
I definitely have question marks around that. I have to say, I don't know if Mikey Butler will follow Tony Kelly to midfield. If Tony starts in midfield, it poses a whole new problem for Kilkenny if they do that, because if they take Mikey Butler out of there, you know, that means someone has to move back, and maybe Paddy Deegan, but it will cause problems for Kilkenny if they do that, and I'm not so sure they might do that. So moving Tony Kelly to midfield is certainly a real positive for Clare, but I would have certainly have question marks around their half-back line and the form of Clare's half-back line at the moment. Fantastic hurlers, there's no one doubting that. Maybe it is the old case of form is temporary and class is permanent, but they will certainly have to improve on their last couple of performances. Adrian Mullen, after being out injured for most of the Leinster Championship, the way he slotted back into that Leinster final, 7 points on play, he covered every inch of Croke Park that day. He really, really troubled Dublin. Will they pose him at 11 on John Conlon to really cause him trouble? Obviously John will like to sit in that deep line centre back role. What will happen with Owen Cody? That's the other question, I suppose. Adam Hogan did a brilliant job in him in the National Hurling League final, but Cody scored 1-5 last year, and Cody is a big game player, so will Cody come out to the half forward line at times too? So I just think Kilkenny, albeit Dublin put up a poor performance, some of it to me comes down to the fact that Kilkenny were just so good in that Leinster final. I think they've improved on last year, and I'm not so sure Clare have.
Neil, for Brian Lowen, like, fifth season managing Clare now, and it's probably fair to say he's seen his journey overshadowed by other teams, and they have looked absolutely brilliant and tantalising during the summer at times as well. Will the Clare players feel it among themselves that they almost owe it to Brian to really now go out and, like, let's get over the line this time?
They certainly will, but that doesn't guarantee you anything. They have a very united group. Now, they're all huge Brian Lohan fans, and that can really work for you in terms of how much they will put into this performance and on Saturday. But the one thing that they have to do is kind of play in the way that Brian played, regardless of how they set up on Sunday, or on Saturday, I should say. They have got to go at it with everything they have, because whenever the game is incredibly intense, when it's almost manic, that's when it suits them most. When it's not about structure, when it's not about set plays, Clare are fantastic when they're living in the moment and the game is played at 100 miles an hour. So they need to just bring that intensity and not allow Kilkenny to get set at the back, as what Brian was alluding to there. They would love to keep Mikey Butler in at the back and play in a very structured way. Clare have to make this frantic. That's what they didn't manage to do in 2022. In 2023, they played within themselves in the first half, but in the second half, they came out and absolutely went at Kilkenny. They need to do that from the start, and that's where their absolute brilliance up front will flourish, because you can't... It's very hard to track players whenever the game has been played in that sort of frantic fashion, and that's where Clare really cut loose and they play with abandon, and actually I think they're unmanageable whenever they're in that flow state.
Well, Brian Lohan has made one change to the Clare team that beat Wexford for the semi-final. Ed McCarthy starts in place of Aaron Shanahan, having only come on as a late sub in the quarter-final victories. Mark Rogers took over free-taking duties. Ryan Taylor is named among the substitutes and could be in line for his first appearance since damaging his cruciate ligament in the loss to Kilkenny at this stage last year. Derek Ling has kept faith with the same Kilkenny 15 that eased to a fifth Leinster title. Mikey Carey was forced off injured in the first half of that victory, but is named to start at left half back. In the other semi-final, Limerick-Cork on Sunday, gentlemen. Limerick have made two changes for their semi-final clash. John Kiley brings Sean Finn.
Goal.
Alan Colley.
Yes!
As I'm giving out the team news, Alan Colley has got too excited for us, gentlemen.
Sorry, lads. Sorry. Florian Wirtz with an equaliser. Jeremy 1-0. What a goal as well. Brilliant.
Describe it for us, Alan.
Yeah, so I said they were throwing the kitchen sink. He's thrown on all the substitutes, Thomas Muller, Fulkrug, everybody. So they must have had 7 or 8 people in the box, Shane, for the cross. And they worked it well out to the left hand side. Mittelstadt, brilliant ball to the back post. And I think it was Fulkrug that got the header initially, knocked it down to Florian Wirtz, and he buried it into the back of the net, Shane. Extra time.
Here we go. Well, not extra time. Yeah, 89 minutes on the clock, and probably a heap of additional time as well. We're hoping for this excitement when there's going to be live commentary of Limerick Cork and RT Radio 1 Sunday Sport on Sunday. I'm loving your enthusiasm, Alan. As I was mentioned, gentlemen, two changes for Limerick. Sean Finn in at right cornerback for Barry Nash, who picked up a hamstring injury. Nash played every minute of the championship. All-star Finn hasn't featured since injuring his hamstring in the months around Robin defeat to the Rebels on May 11th. A third hamstring victim, Seamus Flanagan, who scored 3-3 against Cork, regains his place at full forward from Shane O'Brien, having missed the Munster decider after Dara O'Donovan, Richie English again among the subs as they await for their first championship minutes after recovering from injury. Before I mention the Cork team, Brian, what's your thoughts on that Limerick starting 15?
Yeah, huge. Just before I go on to that, Alan Colley would fit right into our GA, our hurling coverage, I think I have to say. That passion.
Well,
that's
Brian,
we like to do things around here. So
I'll be in Croke Park tomorrow, Brian, because I absolutely love the hurling as well, and I can't wait for it. I'll be at Kilkenny and Clare roaring them on tomorrow.
Huge talking point with Barry Nash missing. What a loss. Would you believe he has played every game in the drive for five since that All-Ireland final or semi-final loss in 2019 to Kilkenny. So Limerick fans, maybe close your ears when you're listening to that one. But if there's one thing Limerick have done over the last number of years, is they've been able to cope with the loss of huge players. You know, Declan Hannan last year, Keane Lynch in the past, obviously Peter Casey now again. The strength and depth of their panel is phenomenal. You know, Shane O'Brien, a young man obviously breaking into this team in rich vein of form. Most of the country would have expected him to start, but I suppose you can't argue with Seamus Flanagan coming in there. You know, so experienced, in a brilliant vein of form before he got injured as well. So look, Limerick look imperious at the moment, there's no doubt about it. Cork are going to have to bring something massive, and obviously they have a big change there themselves. I know you're going to probably get onto that, but you know, Robert Downey coming back in after that illness for the All-Ireland quarter-final, I suppose the big question mark around is who's going to be centre-back. Will it be Robert Downey or will it be Kieran Joyce?
Well, who do you feel will, if you're to answer that question, Neil?
Yeah, I think it'll be Robert Downey. that, you know, 3 and 6 have both been problems for Cork over the past probably 7-8 years, in truth. And the Downey brothers have really kind of cemented their positions there. Kieran Joyce fed into to 6 the last 2 seasons really well, but he is more versatile. He can go and play midfield and push up, such as his athleticism, whereas Robert Downey isn't just as versatile. So I think Kieran will go to midfield, and he's the perfect foil for Fitzgibbon as well, because he can sit and allow him to push forward. It's a bit of a Rolls Royce of a midfield whenever you have the two of them in it, because they can both get scores, both get forward, but definitely he can sit in the pocket and allow Fitzgibbon to push on. Look, they're really well set up at the back now. Like, Mark Coleman's as good a wing back as in the country as well. The two cornerbacks now are two of their best leaders as well. So Cork have sorted out the problems at the back. But can they win enough ball in the middle third to give themselves a foothold? Because, as Brian says, they are going to have to bring everything and then 10% more.
But like, Cork know that they can beat Limerick, and listen, this is Limerick at the sharp end of the season in Croke Park. They're a different beast. But Brian, do you think Cork can come to Croker and play with freedom, not overthink things, and just focus on themselves and not get overawed, perhaps is the wrong phrase, but not to overthink things?
If there's ever a team that can do that, and traditionally it's Cork, isn't it? You look at they thrive in the open space at Croke Park, and probably this is a criticism of Clare, probably going backwards for a second. Clare have not thrived coming to Croke Park, but Cork are certainly, they won't fear Limerick. Obviously haven't beaten them earlier this year, their whole season was on the line. They put up 37 points that day. It's going to take, like, which is obviously a massive score, and to do it against Limerick, it's going to take something huge again. The last day, they really troubled Limerick with their long puckouts. You know, Limerick's zonal defence of that puckouts, they were able to get a flick on, runners in behind. Dermot Burns and Co were caught flat-footed under those puckouts. Cork, obviously, when they concede a goal, all throughout this championship, they've gone route one with the next puckout, straight down the throat, hitting the top of the D and sometimes inside it. And, you know, they scored 2 goals from that the last day against Limerick too. So Limerick will have done their homework on all this, and obviously they will have a plan to counteract that. No better people than Paul Kinnear and John Kiley from that side of things. On the flip of that, Cork short puckouts seriously malfunctioned against Limerick the last day. Grod Hegarty obviously turning over Sean O'Donoghue, setting up that goal for Seamus Flanagan springs to mind. So, you know, Limerick will probably offer up that ball to Cork and say, look, try and work it out if you can, because there is no better 6 forwards in the country. Maybe arguably Kilkenny, but certainly Limerick over the last number of years at defending that short puck out and not allowing it out and turning it over and really hurting teams.
Okay, gentlemen, we have ran out of time, so I'm going to ask you a question, Neil, and Brian, I'm going to come back to you with the same question. Neil, who is going to contest the All-Ireland Hurling Final this year?
I think for sure it will be Limerick. I think they will have their homework done. And the thing we're talking about in the 4 teams that are left, and this is the Mardi Gras weekend for hurling, but we know Limerick are going to bring it. We don't know if Cork and if Clare, you know, will bring the best of themselves to give themselves that opportunity. And we haven't really seen Kilkenny tested yet this year, let's be honest. They were standout above everybody in Leinster with a few shaky performances themselves. And in the Leinster final, they didn't get tested. So we don't know what we're going to see other than Limerick be it bringing it, because they always do. But I think Limerick will go through, and I think Clare will just edge it over Kilkenny. I think they've had more battle, you know, they're battle hardened over the last number of weeks, and I think that will just give them the edge.
Okay, Brian Carroll, same question to yourself.
Yeah, for me, Limerick for certainty. It will be a tight game, but I think Limerick will do it. I just think they just have too much, and all their big players coming back at the moment, and that bench is imperious too. On the flip of that, I think Kilkenny will also do it. I just think they have too much. I think they've improved on last year, and I think they will have too much for Clare. So it will lead us to an All-Ireland final where someone's record's going to be broken, because it's either going to be Limerick for me winning that all elusive 5 in a row, or will it be Kilkenny, the first team to lose 3 in a row, if that happened. So look, we look forward to the next couple of days anyway, certainly.
Very much so. Lots to be decided. For now, Brian Carroll, Neil McManus, thank you both very much. As I mentioned, live commentary of both matches on RT Radio 1 Saturday Sport and Sunday Sport over the weekend. Alan, we are heading for our last break, and Blotna Tracy will be up next with the National Chart Show. This match has finished the Euro 2024 quarterfinal 1-1.
Yeah, extra time, Shane, and Germany obviously finished the stronger because they were chasing the game and they nearly nicked it at the end with Muller as well with a good chance, but I fancy them now strongly to go on and win it. The crowd is up, the momentum in the game, and I fancy them to get the job done now.
Okay, great stuff, Alan. Pleasure as always. Great to have your company. Great to have your enthusiasm.
Thanks,
and your
Shane.
Excitement as
and
well.
I'll be at the hurling as
enjoy
well.
Enjoy the hurling tomorrow.
Apologies.
I did mention we have Shane Stokes on the show this evening for stage 7 of the Tour de France, but he ran out of road. Remco Evenepoel overcame a late scare to win a stage 7 time trial on the Tour de France and eat into Tadej Pogacar's lead in yellow as the front two put time into the other rivals. From the Irish point of view, Ireland's Ben Healy finished 9th on the stage and leaves him 29th overall. Sam Bennett, meanwhile, is 13th in the green jersey points classification ahead of tomorrow's flat stage as well. Sinead, massive thanks to Barry O'Neill and Max Falvey for working on this evening's show. As I mentioned, the National Chart Show is up next with Blodden and Tracy. We're going to check in with the news desk first. Have a great weekend. Game On is back on Monday at 6 o'clock. RTE 2FM.